Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Second, I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram. Stunt me, I'm destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam. Put some respect on my name. Sick like a rain, click and I bang. Y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's episode, we have got on another fantastic guest, and this is David Sutcliffe. He is a somatic practitioner. So welcome to the show, David. How are you doing?
I'm doing great here in Austin, Texas. Happy to be here.
Awesome, man. Happy to have you on board. So I've just done a real brief intro right there, David. And I'm sure when I just said you are a somatic practitioner, I've got the majority of my audience right now going, what on earth is that? So please introduce yourself.
Yeah, well, I'm trained in a modality called core energetics. Core energetics is a somatic psychotherapy, and it uses different physical techniques like hitting, punching, kicking, breath work to help people access feelings held in our bodies and hidden from our awareness. And I had done a lot of talk therapy in my 20s, and which was really useful for what I describe as understanding the math of your problem. You know, things happen to us in our childhood, and then we play out some of those patterns as adults. But I wanted to feel, like really feel my feelings, and I was struggling with that. And this modality gave me all the opportunity and the techniques to be able to dive in and really feel and express everything that was inside me. And, you know, intuitively, most of us know it's good to feel our feelings in context, and that repressing and holding back our feelings is unhealthy, both psychologically, spiritually, physically. So this modality, it gives you the opportunity to you don't have to hold back anything. And I found that very healing and cathartic.
That's interesting. So when you talk about feeling your feelings, what exactly does that mean?
It means raging, crying, feeling your pain, feeling the places we have unconscious resistance to life, which I think is the source of most of our ailments. Really, it helps us understand our defenses. But most of us have pain, grief, fear, anger that is locked inside us. And the reason it's locked inside us is because it wasn't safe to feel it when we were a child. And so we shut down, and then we rationalize our experience in order to make sense of it. And we create belief systems around all the things that happened to us. I mean, the imperative for a child is to stay in connection and favor with their caregiver. So any aspect of themselves that they feel is going to threaten that connection, they're going to disown. So any feelings that they bring up or exhibit that the environment, the caregivers, the parents, whether directly or indirectly reject or don't allow, that gets kind of locked up inside us. And that holding of that emotion can create problems for us, both, as I said, psychologically, but also physically. I mean, when you're holding on with tension to feelings in your body. Like it creates, I mean, I had back pain for a long time. I had all kinds of ailments, and all of it went away when I learned to really feel and express my feelings.
That's really interesting. I mean, I've often said that I think we live in an age of emotional incontinence. I feel that the greater problem in society feels to me more like the opposite. I think that people are being led by their feelings and their emotions far too much, to the point that it's overriding their rational thought and overriding their duty. So I'm assuming there's some type of balance to be had here. So what is the balance between feeling our feelings and not becoming a slave to our feelings?
It's a great question. And I agree with you. I think that is the problem in society, is that people are being run by their feelings, usually from a place of victimization. They make themselves a victim, and then they can rationalize anything from that place. And the work that I'm trying to do and what I'm trying to teach people is self-responsibility. So you want to take responsibility for your feelings. So, which means that you're not necessarily going to act out on them. So what I'm trying to teach people is to contain their feelings, to understand their feelings, to come into relationship with their feelings, so they're not acting out in an unconscious way. Now, in my workshops, you know, we have a space with, you know, pillows and different things, soundproof, where people can get all of that out. And there's something about releasing it, discharging it in that way that helps us understand it. And so we're less likely to act out on it in the world. So actually what I'm teaching is exactly what you're saying. It's like, understand your feelings, have a safe space to express them. But then you have to learn to contain them, and you have to learn to take responsibility for them. And I think once you learn to take responsibility for your feelings, you're a lot more present in life, and you have a lot more power, and you have a lot more awareness about the dynamics of your relationship, and you understand yourself and your motivations in a much deeper way. So my experience of it is that if done in the right way, it makes you a much more powerful, integrated human being.
That's interesting. When you say safe space for feelings, what do you mean by that? Because the term safe space, again, has perhaps been overused and misused to the point that when someone says that they need a safe space, that can be interpreted in a lot of different ways. So when you say safe space for feelings, what does that actually mean?
Yeah, well, it's an intentional space. So the spaces that I create, I mean, they're safe in a sense, but the only rules that we have are don't hurt physically, hurt anyone else, don't hurt yourself, don't hurt the room, like don't slam something. But anything else goes, which means you can discharge your anger, frustration, you know, you can judge another person, scream at them, like whatever comes up, it's all fair game. I mean, it's almost like sports. I mean, I got all of that out when I was a hockey player. Cause when you know, you're on the pitch or in the rink playing hockey, whatever it is, for a man, at least, it's almost like anything goes, right? Well, there's certain boundaries, but you can let yourself go. And so I was looking for a place outside of that I can do that. And that's what this work, at least the way that I facilitate it, that's what it provides for you. So it's not safe in the sense that we're there to protect people. We're actually there to expose them to all of the judgments, the anger, the frustration that you're going to experience out in life. Like I agree with you. What's going on? The way that safe spaces are being talked about and used, again, it's from a place of victimization. It's unconsciously what they're saying is you can't say anything that is going to hurt my feelings. And they're not taking any responsibility for the fact, well, it's your feelings. Like you're responsible for them. Like what somebody else says to you, that's not in your control. And so you are in fact a slave to the world. You are being impacted and add effect to what other people are doing or saying. And so I'm actually teaching the exact opposite, but the safe space that I'm talking about is really just, it takes a skilled facilitator, but I mean, who doesn't want a space where they can just let everything out? Well, you don't have to. I mean, the invitation is you don't have to hold back anything. And all this negative stuff, all the shadow material that we have, I mean, we all have fantasies about getting revenge, or, you know, we want to say things that aren't nice, like the meanness, the cruelty. And it's a place where you can express that with intention, with consciousness. And that's the key, because we're always bringing it back to the self. But that opportunity to just let everything inside you out, I mean, it's a beautiful thing, and it unleashes all kinds of energy, which I think, you know, held back energy, emotion, thoughts, feelings, that's what creates distortion. I mean, this is why the free speech debate is so interesting. It's like, when you hold back saying what you think, you create all kinds of problems and you can't get to the truth. And so what I'm trying to do is just let everything come out, let it all come out and see what's there, see what's underneath. And it all happens in layers as well. There's layers of emotion, there's layers of feeling. And ultimately what it is, it's always going to take you to the center of your pain. Right. And so in some sense, like the work that I do and the work that David Goggins does, it's the same. What's he saying? Go to the center of your pain and feel that. And that's what's going to make you stronger. And that's ultimately what I'm doing. I'm working with the layers that people have to take them to their deepest pain. And so that they can know that they can feel that and that it's okay. And that's going to make them stronger. It's going to make them more courageous. It's going to make them more effective out in the world. They're not going to be avoiding life in the same way, because they're, you know, so much of the what we avoid in life is because we're afraid to feel. I don't want to do this thing because I don't want to feel pain. I don't want to do this thing because I don't want to be afraid. Well, if you can get over that, then you know, life opens up for you immensely.
Man, you've touched on so many interesting things that I often think about. Because I think we live in a very paradoxical time. We live in this strange time where survival has never been easier. I mean, if you think back to previous generations, previous centuries, let alone previous millennia, I mean, if you live, especially in the modern Western world or a developed country in 2023, it's like life is so easy. Survival is so easy and so comfortable. The massive threats of nature and the potential of starvation and famine and pestilence and war, all these things that used to just take people out left, right, and center every single day, you know, by the millions. We've largely overcome a lot of that. We've overcome so many things, and we're in this weird paradox point where it seems like the more comfortable people become and the more luxuries they have and the easier the basic survival becomes, the more detached people become from the human condition in one sense, but also the more they start to fight against themselves. I mean, we seem to be at an all-time high of depression and anxiety and mental health issues and people doing therapy and taking this drug and taking this, like it's very weird. I look at the world in some ways and it seems like, yeah, obviously things are easier and better than they've ever been. But also with that has come this whole host of new problems, which we now need to sort out. And it's very strange. It seems like an odd paradox to me. I actually spend quite a lot of time thinking about this weird paradox of how it seems like, yeah, it's simultaneously getting easier, but for a lot of people simultaneously getting harder, partly because it's getting easier. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. I think so many factors that are contributing to that. And I think one of them is just the rapid rate of technological change. I mean, you know, we went along as a species for hundreds of thousands of years and, you know, hunter gatherers, and then we became agrarian, and life was pretty much the same generation after generation after generation. And people were just, as you said, they were just trying to survive. But since the Industrial Revolution, it's just the rate of change has been so rapid. I think that, it's hard for our minds to catch up. And so I think that's part of the source of the neuroses. It's just that it's like the world is changing so quickly. It's just, we just can't integrate it. And I don't think people know what to do. And it's also the breakdown of the family, the breakdown of the institutions, what's happening right now. So I think people don't feel solid in anything. That said, I think this is just how life goes. I mean, if you think of your own life, or usually you need a crisis and then you have a kind of breakdown. And then from that place, you rebuild. That's sort of the hero story. And that's the pattern that plays out. We hit a limit. And what we knew about ourselves and about the world, it's no longer relevant or useful, or it's no longer effective. And so we have to change. And that change is difficult because it requires a shift in our identity. And people don't like to be in the unknown. They like to hold on to what they know. And so in some sense, I think that's what we're going through, like that all of this is inevitable and it's just part of the change that is happening, and that there is something, I hope, on the other side of this that is positive. But certainly it's disturbing and confusing because it just feels like the worst side of people is coming out. And I, to be honest, I think what's underneath it, when I look at, you know, what's going on with the woke crowd, it just seems to me underneath all of that, that is fear. They're just scared. They don't understand what's going on and they're traumatized in some way. And they're lashing out and they're trying to control life, because that's the thing, that's the belief that they have, that that's what's going to make them feel safe. Now, obviously, that's how I look at things because I've done all this psychological training. So I tend to look at the culture through that lens. But that's what I see. It's a tremendous amount of fear.
Yeah, I hear that. What I've noticed with that, you know, what you called the woke crowd there is having an, you know, these are people who don't have an internal locus of control. So they right. want to control everybody else. They want to control every single other person, every single system and institution, and even other people's minds, right? Like, it's not even enough for them that you behave correctly and civilly. It's like, you must think the right thoughts, right? Like every single thought. And what's interesting as well with that group is, it's never people who themselves are like well put together and impressive, right? I mm-hmm. don't know anyone who's like jacked and woke. Like, it's not, you know what I mean? Like,
no,
I say that
every time I see a woke cheek, post but... by like a bro, I just go check out his page. And every time the dude, it's like, you don't lift, you don't look healthy. I mean. It's, yeah.
So it seems to me like when, you know, you have people who have the internal locus of control and then they're about self-improvement, right? How can I make myself better physically, mentally, spiritually, education, finances, relationships, whatever. They're okay, cool. Like, I can't control the whole world. Like, the world is messy. People are messy. Nature is messy. The institutions are failing us or whatever. What can I control? Cool. I can go to the gym. I can make sure I've got my stuff in order. I can make sure I treat my family, my friends, other people well. I can do my best to help and uplift other people. But I sort of understand, okay, 99.9% of the stuff out there, I don't have control over, right? I'll do my little bits that I can, but my focus every single day is like, okay, what can I do in this moment rather than who can I go out and scream at or chastise, or, you know, what picket, what sign can I hold up and start marching in the streets with a bullhorn and whatever. So I think there seems to be a lot of that going on. And perhaps it's not new. I think that the social media phenomenon has just made it very visible and amplified it and made mm-hmm. it so that it can go viral very globally, very quickly. But when I look at human history, it seems like these sort of types of people have always been there. I don't think wokeness is really new. I just think we're in the sort of latest iteration of it, but people have always exhibited those types of behaviors, especially en masse under various circumstances.
I completely agree. And I think part of it is you're behind a computer screen. Like, some of the things that people say online, they would never say to your face. And because you get popped, you know what I mean? You wouldn't do it. You don't have the courage to do that. And so I think there's a lot of people that have a lot of anger and a lot of resentment. They're unhappy with their lives. And they want to take that bitterness and resentment out on other people. And so they get this kind of hit of negative pleasure and be able to dig in at people. But it's really just an expression of their own pain, their own sadness, their own resentment. They don't feel in control of their lives. And making themselves a victim is very seductive. It's somebody else's fault. It's a system's fault. It's white people's fault. It's women's fault. It's men's fault, whatever it is. It's like, it's somebody else's fault. And you know, what you said is absolutely right. I mean, you can only control yourself, and self-responsibility is all we have. It's the most powerful state of mind that you can have, that I'm responsible for my life. And I'm the one who has to take action. And, you know, if I'm keep, you know, it happens with my clients all the time. Oh, I'm keep dating girls or keep dating crazy women. It's like, well, why are you choosing crazy women? Like, that's, you're the, you know, the common denominator here. What is it inside you? And that's the reframe that I think that, you know, these people need to have, because it's just where all your power is. And that external locus of control, it just keeps you a victim. It keeps you resentful. And it's an epidemic right now, and it gets encouraged, which is, to me, the most devious thing. And politicians and the media is playing off that. They're feeding into these feelings of resentment for mm-hmm. political gain. And so it feels like a dark time. I'm trying not to be cynical about it, because I think you're right. This is a pattern. This isn't a new thing in history. I think the social media has exacerbated it. And I think we're still coming to terms with that. But again, that's, for me, it's exciting. This is an opportunity. You know, it's like, oh, I have to be more disciplined. I have to get my shit together even more, because there's so much fucking chaos going on. Like, that's a call to action. You know, there's an adventure here, and there's an immediacy to it. So in some way, I'm so happy that I'm living through this insanity, because it's bringing out the best in me.
Yeah, I hear that totally. There's a massive opportunity here. And I think that we're seeing it even with ourselves as individuals. I mean, the fact that we can gain tens, hundreds of thousands, millions of followers and listeners and people online simply by sharing our thoughts and speaking and seeking the truth and having conversations, like, it never ceases to blow my mind. Like, increasingly, as every week, every month goes by, like, I increasingly get sort of freaked out by the number of people who know who I am. I mean, it's cool in one way, and it's what I wanted. But it's also very strange that I can just, you know, grab this and I can, like, post something which a million people might see within 24 hours. And that's never existed before. You know, even if you were a king, if you were the ruler of a nation, perhaps you could reach a million people in a short space of time. But I think it's there's all the concern, but with that concern is a massive seed of opportunity for mm-hmm. I would say normal people to just go out there and be authentic and be heard mm-hmm. and really grow something from it. Where this could be a business, it could just be personal, it could just be having a social influence and being able to inspire and motivate people in various ways. And with all the victimhood stuff, it's interesting, because I have two different mindsets on this. And even in a single day, in a single hour, I can flip-flop between them. Sometimes I look at people who are grabbing onto all the victim narratives and blaming everybody else but themselves, and, you know, just stuck in that loop. Sometimes I look at that and it frustrates me, because I want to help them, right? I want to help people, and I'm trying to understand them and this and this. And then sometimes I'm like, the competition is weak. Good.
Yeah,
I flip-flop between them, right? Because I'm like, man, okay, if all of you guys don't even want to try, like, you're mm-hmm. not even doing the basics, so okay, cool, this makes it easy for someone like me, who's very motivated and disciplined, to come in here and just clean up in whatever aspect it is. But then, you know, I go back to, man, but like, my whole mission is to help people, you know, like, I want to help people, I want to uplift people, I want to at least try to give people the tools and some messages. And you know, it's weird, because you can put that out there and a lot of people like it, but you also just get so much flack and spite and anger and whatever, and venom in return. And I'm like, man, I'm not out here spreading venom. Like, you might not like or agree with everything I say, but, you know, I'm trying to uplift. I'm trying to help people. And it's very weird when you're trying to do that. It's, you know, I guess it's like if someone is drowning, it's actually very dangerous to try to save them in certain ways, because, you know, they end up pulling you in, and you have to be very, very cautious with how you approach it.
That's a great analogy, and I use it all the time, you know, because I was trained as a lifeguard. And when you approach a drowning swimmer, you have to tread water with your foot out, so that if they reach for you, you kick them away, because they will pull you down. And yeah. as a psychotherapist, you know, I think about it all the time. There's certain people that don't want to be helped. They just want to come in and they want to, you know, complain about their problems. And that's, you know, an aspect of psychotherapy. It's like people need their emotional experience validated. And so, you know, people have been hurt and they're frustrated and they're upset and they're angry. And so I have a lot of compassion and sympathy for that. But at a certain point, you have to make a choice, as we said earlier, that you have to take responsibility for it. And, you know, I feel the same way you do. Like I have a lot of compassion, and there's a place where that resentment and anger is so destructive. I feel like I have to protect myself. And so I have to push them away or block them or just not engage with them. What I hope, and this has happened to me, in my life, is that when I want to stay open for people to change. And if people reach out for help, or are willing to engage in honest dialogue, like a real discussion, I'm completely open to that. But if it's just about winning the argument and discharging frustration and blame and making the other person bad or wrong, I mean, I don't engage with it, because it's not useful. There's a side of me that feels sad. But yeah, then there's this other side of me. It's like, well, you know, you're making your choices, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Our podcast today is sponsored by The Wellness Company. Did you know that nearly 90% of pharmaceuticals in the U.S. are produced overseas? That's an alarming statistic. If you don't have an emergency kit on hand, it's time to get prepared. The Wellness Company's medical emergency kit contains 8 potentially life-saving medications that every single American should keep in stock. It comes with a 22-page instruction guide on safe medical use for everything from snake bites to COVID to bioterror events. Another stellar product from the Wellness Company is Spike Support. Whether you got vaxxed or not, the virus is still among us in some capacity, as well as the related spike protein. Spike protein can cause brain fog, tissue damage, blood clots, and more. Spike Support is a detoxification powerhouse that aims to strengthen the body's natural immunity and flush out spike protein, so you can get back to that pre-COVID feeling. Get both of these products by going to twc.health/Zuby and get 15% off with the discount code Zuby. That's twc.health/Zuby and use discount code Zuby to get 15% off. Disclosure, the medical emergency kit is only available to U.S. residents. Dude, I feel exactly the same way. And this has sort of evolved over time as well, because I've been on every social media platform pretty much for over a decade. I've been putting myself out to the public for half of my life at this point. And it's really interesting, especially as popularity and reach and influence grows, how you start to, what I've noticed is there are far more, I'm aware of types of human beings that exist now that I wasn't aware of 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And 4 or 5 years ago, I was already a decade into my journey. But when you're just reaching so, so, so many people, like every day I see something that I still see things that surprise me every day on the internet. And I'm just like, I did not know this type of human being existed, because in the real world, I don't associate with people like that. I don't have any friends or people I went to school with or whatever who are like that. And I'm just like, wow, there are some very far gone people out there. And it's really fascinating, because I mean, the first 10 years I was on Twitter, I blocked nobody. Mm. I blocked no one for 10 years. And I actually was of the opinion of, like, you know, I thought, and I see this now from people with smaller accounts when I even talk about blocking sometimes, is, you know, I thought, oh, you know, blocking, you know, number one, you don't need it. And number two, oh, you know, it's a little bit like weak. And then once I got past maybe it was 50,000 or 100,000 followers, I was like, okay, now I understand. It changes, and it changes exponentially. You just start dealing with it. I'm like, whoa, okay. And like, I see why there are some people out there. I don't even know if they're people, right? There's some accounts. Some of them could be bots. Some of them, like, I don't even know what they are, but it's like, whoa, this is not an individual you can have a conversation with. Like, there's no, this is just pure 100% malice from one end. And it's just destructive. And it doesn't just affect you, but if they're there causing drama amongst like everyone else who was trying to follow and interact and what, I'm just like, man, like, you just got to kick this person out. Or you get people who there's accounts that, you know, most people aren't even aware of this. Like if you're high profile, like they try to get your account banned. Right. They try to like, see, right. Like whether it's mass reporting or it's like stirring some crazy. And I'm just like, wow, I've never, this level of malice for someone I've never interacted with. Like, I don't know you don't know me. And I just started seeing all this. I'm like, wow. Okay. Now I have a better understanding of why certain things are done a certain way. And I'm not even at, you know, the biggest level yet. I don't know if you're Elon Musk. I don't even know I don't understand how you even navigate the world, right? Let alone Twitter, which is just generally, it's like, man, you just have to constantly be thinking of this stuff. I heard the other day that Mark Zuckerberg spends, I think, $3 million a month on security.
Wow.
Personal security. Right? And it's like, that's when you're also just like, man, I don't want to be that successful. like that's crazy. I mean, I understand it, but it's just like, isn't that kind of sad in a way, though? Isn't it sad that even is necessary?
Yeah, well, you're completely isolated from society, and I would imagine, well, I know this because I spent, you know, 20 years in Hollywood as an actor, and there's a real cost with that kind of fame. And a bubble gets created around you, and I mean, your dreams have come true in some sense, but there is a price that you have to pay. It was the same with, you know, Hugh Hefner. When I first got out to LA, I went to a bunch of parties, and I knew somebody that knew him really well, and I got to be around him a little bit. And it seemed to me at the time he had like 8 girlfriends and these big parties and celebrities everywhere. And everybody was, you know, he was the man. Everybody came up and wanted to meet him and shake his hand. But when I really looked at him, he looked lonely. Which makes sense. Like, who can relate to Hef? And everybody wants something from him. And so they're using him in some way. And he's just not one of the regular people. He can't just walk through the party and meet people and trust that the interaction that he has with them is going to be authentic. Because everybody is in some kind of projection or transference with him. And, you know, you face that, and any famous person, you know, big and small, is going to face that. I mean, you know, it's projection, what we call in psychotherapy is transference. So when I'm working with a client, generally they're unconsciously transferring their father onto me. I'm father, I'm dad. And I have to know that. I have to work with that. And I can use that in some sense to help them navigate their feelings and emotions. And it helps me not take anything personally, of course, because when they're talking to me, if they're frustrated with me or upset with me, or which is negative transference, and they might have positive transference that everything I do is just wonderful and I can't make any mistakes. But and both are seductive in their own way. But it's not really about me. They're not seeing me. And so it's the same for you. It's like you're just a mass projection because people don't know you, you know, these people. And so who you represent something to them, and it's going to be different for different people. But, you know, somebody who's successful, somebody who speaks their mind, somebody who has integrity, you know, somebody who's thoughtful, and somebody who has power and influence. And I think most people are longing for those things. And if they feel like they can't achieve that because of the circumstances of their life, then they might look at you and just want to take out their frustration on you and turn you into a bad guy. And I think the skill is, and I don't know what your journey with this has been, is how do you not take that personally? Because as you said, there's a lot of vitriol coming at anybody, whatever side of the argument you're on, coming at people online. And which is the other thing that I think is hard to confront, especially post, COVID. This is how dark the world can be. And again, I don't want to be cynical about it, but people get captured by dark forces, dark forces inside themselves, and they rationalize it. And you can feel the energy out there that wants to control, imprison, kill. Mm-hmm. Like it's a vibe, and it's not my imagination. I mean, it's
100%.
It's real. And when I think about it, it's like, as you said, it's like, well, when I think about history, this is actually common. This is the pattern. This is how mobs have operated. And maybe we thought, because of democracy and capitalism that we'd gotten past that, but no, that human instinct, that part of our nature is alive and well.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I've made this point in many podcasts, and I say that as far as I'm concerned, we are only different from our ancestors in two ways. I don't think human beings have not fundamentally changed over hundreds or even thousands of years, right? We are the same. We have two advantages over our great, 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 great grandfathers. Number one is that we have better stuff. We have tech, right? We have better technology. Yeah. We can do cool things like this, like have a conversation across a giant ocean in real time and see each other in high definition and then spread that out to many more thousands of people. That's pretty cool. So we have better stuff. And we have access to history. Mm-hmm. So we have access to, should you choose to seek it out, which many people don't, we have access to all of this collective integrated knowledge over millennia, which we can study and learn from, right? So we can look back at even the past 100 years, look back at the 20th century, see some of the terrible, awful things that happened, the mass psychoses, wars, genocides, like people going crazy, different ideologies and isms and schisms rising up and being conquered and all of these things. And we can know not what to repeat and know not what not to repeat, because we can just see what happened in the past. So when you see a bad idea coming down the pipeline, right? If someone's pushing some idea, the reason we know that they're even bad is it's like, wait, that's been tried before, right? If someone comes up, hey, I've got this idea, it's called communism, and this is how we're going to do it, right? And you're like, wait, we've got data on this. Let's look back at every single country where this has been tried. Let's look at what happened. Let's look at how many people, you know what? That's a bad idea, right? Because and people didn't know that until it happened. I'm sure at the time, there were some people who were like, I'm not sure about this one, but a lot of people are like, why don't we try that one out, And then it plays into base human nature. And if people don't learn from history, then it does just, as they say, it doesn't repeat, but it rhymes. And that, because we haven't changed, right? Everyone is prone to, we're both in terms of our virtues and our vices and the way we behave individually versus how we behave collectively. And the same person, I'm sure you're very well aware of this, the same individual can behave very differently in different circumstances, right? If there's some riot or there's some mob or it could be online or it could be offline. There are people who just get sucked into that. And it seems some people are very susceptible to it. Some people are far more resistant, but there's going to be a percentage of people who just get sucked into that. And they'll start doing and saying things that they absolutely would not if they were just by themselves. Mm-hmm. They might even go out and start breaking things and, committing violence and looting. And like, looting is quite an interesting phenomenon, because I look at that and I'm like, I'm sure most of those people don't normally steal.
Yeah.
Right. But they're just caught up. They're caught up in the thing. The responsibility is diminished because it's like, okay, well, if everyone else is doing it, I'm probably going to get away with it. There's just so many interesting things going on. And I've never formally studied psychology, but I feel like I've sort of just through what I do, I've kind of gained an honorary degree in it over the years. And it's very fascinating, because I don't think there's anything more interesting. There's nothing more interesting to me than human beings.
I agree. That's why I got into the work that I'm in. Humans are fascinating. It's a puzzle to solve. And there are patterns. And But because everybody's a little bit different, the way that that pattern manifests can be different. It can look very different. And, you know, it's interesting what you said. Again, I agree with you. I don't think we've changed that much. And with all the technology, yeah, we have access to all of this information. We have all the information that's out there we have access to. And that's a beautiful thing. So we can really study it for ourselves, and we can learn and become an autodidact and really make an evaluation and yes, and see these patterns in history. At the same time, that technology has also given powerful people the ability to control us, because we know how susceptible we are to persuasion. We know how susceptible we are to groupthink, and they certainly know that. And we want to stay connected to the tribe. People, that's where it's safe. I mean, that's in us. Like, you go outside the tribe, you're going to have a hard time surviving. And that base instinct is still there. So you see it with the virtue signaling and everything else. It's like, I need to signal to my tribe that I am one of them so I can stay in favor with them so I can survive. And it takes a certain kind of character to be able to step outside that and, speak their own mind and even let themselves know what they think, because there is a mechanism in the mind that will not even let ourselves know information that might threaten our connection with the in-group. So we're constantly deluding ourselves. And, you know, I went through this. I was an actor in Hollywood for, you know, 20 years, voted for Obama twice, and thought Republicans were insane. I bought into everything. And then Trump came along and I saw the things that they were saying about him. And I was like, wow, he said that? And then I would go watch the clip. I'm like, that's not what he said at all. And I wasn't like into Trump. I was just like, that's a lie. That's not healthy. That's not good for democracy. Like, what is going on? And that really woke me up to the true nature of media and politics. Obviously, many people had already been woken up, but that was my wake up. And then I had this experience of sharing what I thought online and just getting hammered. Because anything that wasn't Trump is a Nazi, you were supporting Trump. And so I went through that process of essentially getting kicked out of my in-group. And it was not easy. And so I have a lot of compassion and sympathy for people. I also had, you know, I had a relationship with this woman years ago, and she was like an ardent feminist, online blasting every day. Exactly. I don't know. She was a writer in Hollywood.
I could have warned you about that one if we'd known each other earlier.
I knew what I was getting into. I guess I just wanted to have the experience. But she was a writer in LA and for television, and she was always, you know, online and about how unfair it was for women. Well, you know, which on some level, fair enough. But I asked her, I said, hey, you know, do you think it's harder or easier for you to get a job as a writer in LA being a woman? And she thought about it and she said, well, it's probably easier for me. I said, then why are you watching every day online? Like, what is this? And she copped to it. And then what she said was very interesting and revealing. She said, well, this is what I talk about with my friends. So all of her ideology was really just a way that she connected with her friends. That's where they got together. And if she were to suddenly say, oh, actually it's not so unfair. Actually, I'm advantaged as a woman in Hollywood. She was afraid that she, you know, her friends would push back and she'd get kicked out. So, and I think we all have that instinct. And so I'm sensitive to it up to the point where they are doing real damage and coming after people.
Mm-hmm. Man, so many interesting things going on there. You know, there's a point you made earlier where you were talking about the decline of trust in various institutions. And I think one of the hardest things for people right now, and I think this is just, I feel like it's been nonstop since about 2015. I feel for the past 8 years, people have just been struggling to make sense of things. Mm-hmm. I think regardless of someone's political views, regardless of their religious views, regardless of like where they are, if you're just especially, you know, whether you're in the UK, but even more so in the US, it seems like there's been a constant 8 years of things just not making sense to people and people not knowing who and what they can trust. And I think, you know, it's okay if there's one thing that's, if there, you know, you've got a table with, I don't know, say you have a table and it's got 10 legs and, you know, one of them is a little wobbly. It's like, that's fine. But if like every single one of the legs is just shaking and shaking and you don't know, wait, like, is this whole thing going to collapse? And it's interesting because regardless of, you know, I talk to a lot, my audience is more conservative, is more right-leaning. But you know, it's not just that. I'm aware, I'm aware, and I communicate with people with lots of different viewpoints. And it's really interesting because both, I'm aware there's more than two sides, but for the sake of the conversation, both sides say the same thing. Like they say the same thing about the other side. You kind of get what I mean. Like someone can be talking, and if you take the words like left and right out of it, you can't really tell who's talking. Like this side thinks, oh, like they've gone crazy and they've shifted radical and this and this and this. And then the other side is thinking the same thing. And it's just constant confusion. And then during the whole like pandemic period where the info is chopping and changing and they're saying this week and then this and then this, and everyone's behaving weird and people are isolated and it's all very inhuman. And it's like the foot's never come off the gas. Maybe it is a little bit right now. Like, I don't know if there's a current thing right now, right? Last year it was, you know, war broke out in Ukraine and that came sort of and ended the pandemic essentially. And now everyone's, you know, freaking out about this. I don't know if maybe right now is a period where they're trying to make a current thing. You know, sometimes they pull out the aliens and the UFOs or they try to get people jacked. But I don't think there's really a thing right now. And maybe that's making people even more nervous because they're like, man, what have they got planned, right? Are they going to bring back the lockdowns? Are they going to do this? Are they going to do that? And so there's just hasn't been a moment of just like, okay, you know what? Just chill, you know, everyone just relax a bit and go live your life and stop obsessing over this and this and this. But yeah, I just think it's been, people have been jacked up nonstop on you know, fear and anxiety and division and polarization and confusion for years on end at this point.
It's bread and circus as the empire falls, and I agree with you. I mean, I had to make that decision. It's like I had to limit my time online because it's just I'm not immune to having all of that insanity get inside me, and I find myself agitated, and I'm sitting at dinner talking about it with my fiance, and I'm like, "What?" She's like, "What? Forget about all this, and you know, go outside and go for a walk and get into nature. You got to get grounded." That is the most important thing. As we talked about earlier, you have to stay centered, you have to stay grounded. There is a way through this. I'm a little concerned about the election coming up because, you know, you talk about, you know, a leg on a table, not believing that the elections are fair.
Yes.
That's an end game. I mean, that's the end of it. And I don't think either side is going to accept the election in 2024. Maybe I'm wrong, but it just seems that way, and that's what scares me, because I don't know where we go from that if you have half the country not believing the election results, and I think you have, I don't say half the country, but I think a lot of people think the last election at the very least there were some shenanigans and that it wasn't entirely fair.
Do you know what people forget, David?
Mm-hmm.
People forget the level of election result denial that happened in the 2016 election.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. People talk about the 2020 like it was the first time that people didn't believe. And I was like, what about the whole, you know, Donald Trump is a Russian agent and Russian collusion and interference and all? I mean, it's not a brand new thing. You know, and like I don't even talk about the. I don't even go into, you know, was the election stolen or this. And like, I know a lot of people who are very, very into that, but I'm just like, to me, what strikes me is the fact that I'm just like, well, this is the same thing that happened in 2016. Like Trump
That's right.
won, and even on like on the mainstream media, they were like, this, you know, Hillary Clinton was like, this is not, he's not a legitimate president, right? There were some shenanigans, there was this, there was that. And then it happened in 2020, and suddenly everyone, you know, everyone has amnesia and they forgot that the same thing happened the other way around the previous time. But you're absolutely spot on that the fact that that is happening, you know, and whoever wins, you know, that people who voted the other way are going to be like, nah, like this wasn't fair. There was cheating. There was stealing. It seems almost inevitable at this point that some degree of that is going to happen. And you're right that if people don't even have faith we at least have fair elections.
Yeah.
Then, you're combined with everything else. I mean, declining trust in the news media, declining trust in every alphabet agency, whether it's the FBI or the CIA or the CDC or, you know, the education board, whatever it is. I don't know. Like it's
traumatizing. I mean, if you're, I mean, think about, again, I'll bring it back to my framework. If you are a child and you're growing up in a family and your parents are completely untrustworthy, they lie to you all the time. They say one thing and do another, but then they hold you to that standard. I mean, there's a general sense that it's not stable. That is traumatizing for a child. And I think what's happening is traumatizing for a lot of people. I think that's why, you know, there's so much division and fear and rage, because there's nothing to hold on to and people feel betrayed. I certainly felt betrayed by what had happened to COVID, because I wanted to give the establishment, I wanted to give them my trust, but they broke that trust and then they continue to double down.
Yes.
And lie. And so what's left for me is like, you know, you have to do something to earn my trust. And again, maybe all of this is inevitable. You know, when you read Ray Dalio's book, Changing World Order, this is a pattern in history, empires rise, empires fall. And this is what it looks like when an empire falls, which is a little sad, but again, interesting time to go through. And so, I think the most important thing, and you can't really understand what's happening in real time. You know, the analogy that I've used before, it's like looking at a billboard, a two-story billboard from like 1 inch away. Like you can't see the whole thing. You can't take it in. And so I try to be humble to that I'm probably not seeing things perfectly clearly. And the best thing that I can do is not get too involved in all the drama and just focus on my own life and focus on my family and just do the best I can to try to be, you know, kind and generous and just to work hard. That's all.
Mm. I think that's a really important message, because coming back to what we were saying earlier on in the podcast, you can't control 99% of it, right? Like I have the same. It's funny. Sometimes I have conversations with people and they think that, or even online, sometimes people think that I'm not like aware of some of the threats out there, or that I like don't. I'm like, no, I'm very aware. I'm just also aware that me sitting down every day online or offline and just sort of freaking out and panicking and being paranoid, whatever the thing is, right? Like that's not going to help me. Like
that's right.
All I can do is I can do what I can do. I've got to live my life, right? I've only got one here on this earth until, you know, afterwards. And so I'm not going to just spend months, days, weeks, years of my time being afraid of whether it's, oh, you know, the climate change is going to kill us all, or, you know, there's a virus out there and, you know, there's going to be a never ending pandemic and everyone's going to die, or this, or, you know, or even, oh, you know, the globalists are, you know, going to take over and we're going to own nothing and we'll be happy. And they're ushering in the new world order. And this, I'm just like, dude, I'm very aware. I know who Klaus Schwab is. I'm aware of the WEF. I'm aware, like I'm fully aware of all this stuff, but I'm not going to just spend all my time and all my energy and my messaging to just be like giving people even more fear. Hey, here's another thing to be scared of. Here's another thing to freak you out. Here's another. It's like, look, be aware of that. There are forces out there and there are strange things going on. Like, don't stick your head in the sand, but look at it all and be like, okay, cool. Let me prepare myself. Let me prepare my family. Let me prepare my career, my future, my finances, whatever it is, so that whatever does come down the pipeline, I will be best prepared to handle it. Oh, you know, oh, there's a new scary disease. You know what? Let me be in the best physical health that I can be in. So that if, you know, I do, oh, you know what? Oh, okay. Oh, it got me, right? Okay, I'm sick. Okay, cool. A week later, you know what? I'm feeling fine now, right? Do what you can. Build up your skill set, build up your finances, right? If there's some horrible economic thing, if inflation goes even crazier, okay, cool. Like, I'm at least in a position where I'm not going to be out in the street, right? That's what I recommend to people. It's why I'm always pushing, you know, self-improvement, whether it's just go to the gym, you know, eat better food, work on yourself, find multiple sources of income, you know, connect with other people, build your network, explore other opportunities, not just in your own country, but around the world, connect with people, whatever it is. It's just like, look, just be prepared, right? Be prepared. Yeah. I hope and I pray every day that, like, the worst possible thing that could happen is not going to happen. And lo and behold, usually it doesn't. But if it does, if and when that time comes, let me at least be, you know, capable to deal with it the best way possible. And if I'm not, well, you know, again, I can't control everything. So I don't know. That's how I think about it.
Well, I think that's the best way to fight it, is to become sovereign. I mean, I have this conversation with my fiance. Do we want to fight the old world or start building the new? And I think the world that's being built is of sovereign individuals. And I think that's new. That doesn't mean that we're completely individualistic, but it means that we understand now that, you know, the individual and taking responsibility for ourselves, that's really the seed of everything. And so to make yourself strong, and that it's in fact your responsibility to make yourself, as for yourself, for your family, for your community, for your nation, like, make yourself strong, like, get your shit together. Don't be seduced by these addictions. And if you're struggling, get help for it. And I think the times demand it. I think, and I've done it. I've wasted a lot of time and energy, you know, screaming into the void about things that I cannot control. And it's not that I'm wrong about what I'm saying necessarily, but who cares? It's I'm not having any impact. I mean, Elon Musk is, you know, he's taking it on, certainly, and that's a choice that he's made, and he has that kind of power and influence, and I'm glad that he's doing it. But I really think the best way for the average person to fight what I think is a kind of, whether it's conscious or not, it's just human nature. Humans want to control other humans. I mean, slavery is something that's been with us for a long time, and I don't think it's gone away. I think it's just taken on a different form. And so we need to be aware of that. And so the freedom comes when we're free inside our own mind. And we're not free inside our mind if we're screaming at the elite, screaming at the left or the right. In some sense, you're going back to where we started. You are a slave to your emotions. And probably, again, from my perspective, it's probably some unresolved trauma. Who are you really screaming at? Like, when you're screaming at Trump, who is that? Well, I can tell you from my experience, it's probably you got some shit with your dad. You know, there's some stuff going on underneath the surface there. That's it's not about what it's about. And so I'm despite all the madness, I think it's an exciting time, and there's so much opportunity and there's so much freedom available to people to be able to make money offline, to get out of the institute. You don't need to go to university. I mean, you can learn everything you want to know online. You can figure out how to make money online. It's all there, and it's a fascinating, beautiful time in human history. And so I try to be grateful for what's happening and the opportunity that's here, and not focus on the destruction.
Amen. And anyone with any awareness of what's going on around the world and things that have gone on in human history, if you put it in perspective, then we all, regardless of who you are, like, we've got so much to be grateful for. And if you don't think that things can get worse, pick up a history book. Like, they could get a lot worse. So let's be glad that we're not, you know, I'm not worried that I'm about to be shipped off to, you know, fight a bloody war in a trench or anything like that. So I thank God for that. Yeah, we've got our new issues with, you know, new generations, but we're all going to be okay, people. Everyone listening, we're all going to be okay. David, I want to be respectful of your time. I'm so grateful that you came on, especially at late notice to make this happen. I really appreciate that. I love your insights. Where can people find and follow you online?
If you go to my website, davidsutcliffe.com, it's all there. You can learn a little bit more about my work and find my social media, where I post all kinds of videos about emotions and all the things that I talk about.
Awesome, David. Really appreciate you, man. Thanks so much for joining the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. I appreciate you.
Thank you, man. Appreciate the opportunity. I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram. Stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam. Put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang. Y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.